Mildred had only one thing on her mind: find Ryan so they could round up the others. She knew that the one-eyed man had been billeted with Grey Horse, so she headed for the SEC compound. As she approached, keeping an eye out for any pursuers, she could see the dreadlocked SEC chief walking away from Ryan, who was obviously lost in thought. Mildred looked around. If she was being followed, then orders were to trail her and not to stop her, which meant that Ethan wanted to see what they would do. Okay, let the bastard play his games for now. It crossed her mind that she preferred barons who liked to flaunt their power with strong-arm tactics. At least you knew exactly where you stood with them and didn't have to play ridiculous paranoid mind games. Ryan was about to turn and walk away from the SEC chief's shack when he caught sight of Mildred, running toward the wire that encircled the compound. Her face was set and grim. Ryan jogged over to meet her at the wire SEC fence.
What's going on?
Mildred told him all that she had learned from the healer. She also outlined her suspicions about being followed. Ryan cast his eye over the territory at her back. There were no signs of any SEC men, just the residents of Pleasantville going about their business. But he didn't doubt her judgment.
Fire blast. I'm sick of waiting for something to happen. Let's get the others rounded up.
Without pause, the one-eyed man started to scale the wire. If he used the main gate, he may have to try to explain himself to the SEC guards, maybe even take them out. This would be quicker, as the wire around the compound was a purely visual barrier, only 10 feet high. He flipped over the top and landed next to Mildred.
Right. We should stick together now.
No complaints from me on that score. Who are we going to pick up first?
Jack would want to hear all this, don't you think?
Jack Lauren looked out the window at Jono's house, feeling like a coiled spring waiting to explode into action. All his instincts screamed that danger was imminent. The small signs in Jono's actions and attitudes toward him spoke of a man who was biding his time before going in for the kill. The fat man was in his kitchen area, frying cured pork. He seemed to spend most of his time in the house in the kitchen, which explained his huge gut. He was singing tunelessly an interminable song about a gaudy house with moody sluts who could do impossible things. Jack doubted if the fat man ever got to do what he was singing about. But at least he wasn't on Jack's back, taunting him. It was almost as if he wanted to goad him into action. Jack had more patience than the fat man could ever imagine. It was on that thought that Jack caught sight of Ryan and Millie moving toward the house. They weren't bothering to be cautious. Something had happened. That had to be the reason for them being here. No need for caution on his part, then. Jack smiled as he moved toward the kitchen. He was so quiet, and the fat man was so absorbed in his food, that Jono didn't hear Jack pick up the skillet. It was time for Jack to join his companions. Christy was bored out of her skull. She had cut, stored, and sold cloth until she never wanted to see another roll of material again. The smell from the dye pots at the rear of Angelica's house cum warehouse, where she added her own touches to the bales that were brought from traders or woven in Pleasantville, was beginning to catch at the back of Christy's throat, making her want to gag any time she went near the back of the building. As if this weren't bad enough, she'd been unable to find out anything about the real business of the Baron, the multicolored merchant staying firmly silent on that point. She was supposed to be cutting enough material for a dress. Instead, she was looking out the window. Christy had to blink when she saw Ryan, Jack, and Mildred coming toward the house with no attempt at stealth. Her attention didn't shift as Angelica came into the room.
Christy, are you finished with the cutting yet? I have dye pots to empty and they're too heavy for one.
She stopped when she saw Christy gaping open-mouthed out the window.
What is this that is happening?
She came over to look, but stopped dead when she saw the trio approach. She looked at Christy. It was a look that asked what they were doing out in the open like that, and what was Christy going to do when she was supposed to stay here? Christy shrugged and answered in a simple but eloquent manner. She hit Angelica with one well-judged punch, rendering her unconscious. Then she ran back to her room, grabbed her weapons, and made for the door to join her companions.
What in the name of Gaia is going on? Shouldn't we be playing at triple red?
It's not the time for that. It's the time to goad Ethan into showing his hand. Have you got your blaster?
Christy nodded.
Mildred?
Mildred smiled thinly.
Yeah, I always remember to keep my heat packed. I hope John did the same.
Mildred was unaware that the armorer was at large with only his Tecna, having had no opportunity to take his own weapons from the Pleasantville Armory before making his break.
And then there were two. Who's next?
Doc's nearer than JB, so I guess he should be our next pickup. Let's go get him.
Doc Tanner took the tape out of the old video player, slid it into its case, and placed it back on the shelf from where he had taken it. He felt sick at what he had seen, and even sicker at what he suspected Ethan had in store for the companions.
Oh, dear. I do wish you hadn't done that. I may have been able to persuade Ethan that you were too old to take part, and that you would be better off here, helping me with the research. Now, I fear I shall have to report you to Grey Horse, and the whole matter will be out of my hands.
Doc turned at the sound of Bones's voice. The bespectacled man was standing in the doorway, still holding the screwdriver and soldering iron with which he had been working on the old comp.
You knew I would be curious, of course.
It's a shame, as I truly thought I had found someone whose thirst for knowledge would keep me company in the years I have left to me. I've never met anyone like you, someone who has the same thirst.
Same thirst? Thirst for what? For senseless slaughter? I've seen what you record on the machines you restore.
And are you so innocent? You are so without blame, without any stains? You have never killed?
Of course I have. We all have. That is the way of things in this nightmare land. I've killed because I had to in order to survive.
And you think it is gratuitous for us?
Doc flung an arm out to indicate the videos.
And filming it is necessary?
Yes, for survival, as a means of making...
The sentence was cut short. As soon as Bones had looked toward the shelves of videotapes, Doc had seized his sword stick from where it stood against the table, tossed it in the air, and grabbed hold of the bottom. He swung the cane, and the silver lion's head crashed against the side of Bones' head.
Oh, dear. I do hope that wasn't too hard.
Doc stepped over the prone man and felt for a pulse. When he found it, he was relieved to find that it was still strong. For he could to some degree see that Bones was a prisoner of circumstance, considering his age and infirmity. Would another baron other than Ethan have been so generous? It was time for Doc to find Ryan and to round up the others. With urgency, he made his way to the front of the house, making sure he had his Lama loaded, just in case there were Sekmen on guard. The last thing he expected to see as he opened the door was the sight that greeted him. Ryan, Jack, Christy, and Mildred coming toward him. JB felt sick. Dark night, if only the world would stay still. But if it wasn't going to, then there was little he could do about it except try to make the best of it. JB made his way to the door of the hospital. Behind him, on the floor, he could hear Michaela whimper as she began to regain consciousness. She wouldn't be in any fit state to stop him, no matter how weak he felt. So he left her and concentrated on making his way outside. He was acutely aware that he had to look conspicuous, as he was having trouble staying upright or walking in a straight line, but there was nothing he could do about that. He felt as if he were burning up, but there was nothing he could do about that either. The only thing he could do was try to reach Ryan. Maybe Millie had gone there. Maybe the others were trying to link up right now. Maybe... The armorer was aware of the stares he was getting as he staggered down the street. He was also aware that no one seemed to be willing to help or to intervene in any way. They were just watching him, as though they had been expecting this. The five companions were headed for the armory when they became aware of a disturbance back on the main street.
Hold it. Maybe Ethan's finally got the sec ready to round us up.
So why haven't they stopped us before now? It's all been a bit too simple, right?
Yeah. It's like we're rats in a maze.
Ryan looked at her questioningly, and she shrugged.
Something they used to do in the old days, to see how they'd react. I'll explain it sometime. Point is, I feel that's what Ethan's doing, seeing how we'll react.
Whatever. But now we need to pick up JB. Jack, make a quick wreck of the main street. Check out if that's something we should be avoiding before we carry on.
The albino nodded and was gone. The remaining companions took cover and awaited Jack's return. He wasn't long in coming, and he looked even more grim than usual.
No need look, JB. Found him. And not looking good. Come on.
They followed Jack out onto the main street, where they came across a bizarre sight. While the crowds went about their everyday business, a small group had formed around JB, watching him as he attempted to make his way toward the sec camp, struggling with every step. They were watching him with curiosity, but making no attempt to intervene or to help.
What the hell?
John! What's wrong?
Mildred cut a swath through the crowd to reach JB's side. The armorer looked up at her, then stumbled and fell to his knees. He felt her strong grip take him by the elbow, stopping him from pitching face forward onto the road. She was appalled to see how pale he was, sweat spangling his brow and running in rivulets down his sallow cheeks. His eyes were struggling to focus.
Millie, I've been looking for you. Tried to get away from Scar, reach the rest of you. Chased by sec men. Weird thing is, just shot me with a dart. Don't know what that was about.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.
You're listening to Death Hunt from the Deathlands series, produced in Graphic Audio. It's a movie in your mind. But what do you do when the show's over and you're wondering how to get your next Deathlands title? They're sold in truck stops across the U.S. and Canada, but they do go fast. If you can't find Graphic Audio there, we've got a number for you. 1-800-670-5220. That number and a phone are all you need to experience again the intensity of more Deathlands in Graphic Audio. When you call and order, we'll send your selection right away, so you can look forward to your next Deathlands in Graphic Audio, mile after mile. Just call 1-800-670-5220. Our customer support folks have a large selection of unabridged Deathlands titles, all produced in the same amazing Graphic Audio you're listening to right now. Call 1-800-670-5220. Our number is also conveniently printed on the cover of all of our audio thrillers. Deathlands in Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind. Due to intense violence and sexual situations, Graphic Audio is rated for mature audiences.